The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1126. It's the 26th of July, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Tony Gilby, Managing Director of Talou Energy, T-L-O-U, ticker there. And Tony discusses their recent operational update at their coal bed methane project in Botswana. Also on the podcast, Jay Bhattacharjee, CEO of Aminex, A-E-X is the ticker there. And Jay talks about their recent farm-out agreement and milestones coming up at the business. Plus, Hanno Pengilly, Chief Development Officer at Nkondesi Energy, NCCL, discusses their project update they released today. And James Campbell, Managing Director of Botswana Diamonds, BOD, gives an update on their Kalahari Desert Exploration Project and other parts of the business. And also, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tony Gilby, Managing Director of Talou Energy. That's T-L-O-U. Tony, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Good to be here.
Now, you've recently released an operational report and a quarter ending the 30th of June. And so we'll get into the final detail of that in a bit, the highlights as you see them. And then I'll ask you at the end for three reasons why someone should hit that follow button. Before we do, though, Tony, for people who are listening now, say it's the first time they've ever listened to the podcast, and obviously they're not familiar with the company, how would you summarise Talou Energy, please?
Well, I'd summarise Talou Energy as being the most advanced gas-to-power company in the entire country of Botswana, and we are poised to add massive upside for our shareholders. Justin?
Excellent stuff. Okay, so at the moment, like I say, operational report, this will take us into where you are at the moment. So I suppose, start off with, it's worth saying that you, you know, as a pre-revenue company, it's always important that you have cash, because people are always looking for this. And so you've just raised approximately, you know, $8 million US dollars. What is that going to be used for then, Tony?
Yes, so the company is in a very strong cash position now to continue to further our objectives, and those objectives revolve around drilling additional gas flowing wells and securing a power purchase agreement, as well as doing all the background work required for connecting our proposed gas to power generation project to the grid. So the very strong cash position will be primarily able to be used to drill the new gas production wells, which we're working hard to bring ready to drill, and we hope we anticipate that won't be too much longer now. We've announced those wells should kick off in the third quarter, and they'll be positioned in the location of our proposed gas processing facility. So any gas flows and discoveries in this location, which is an area that has been high graded by our independent expert who's looked all through our extensive geological database, any gas flows from this region will be able to be readily connected to our proposed gas processing and power generation facility in a very low cost manner.
Yeah, and you've got a massive area your license covers, doesn't it?
Indeed, we have 8,000 square kilometres approximately under licence, owned 100%. And we're concentrating on the zone that looks like it's the best to develop first, and that's based on an independent review of our extensive geological database, which comprises many wells, giving us subsurface control, as well as the recently acquired seismic data. The data was acquired earlier this year and proved to be of excellent quality.
Yeah, and in the release, you announced there some of the licenses there and their expiry and status and all that stuff, and some of them are coming up for sort of renewal. I mean, do you see any issues with the renewals? I mean, or is it just a formality, really?
Well, we've been through a number of the renewals their renewal process over the years since we've been in the country, over the several years that we've been operating in Botswana, and we haven't had any issues to date, Justin, so I don't anticipate any issues in the foreseeable future either. We are one of the few, perhaps the only one in Botswana to spend real money on the ground to drill real wells, as is our obligation, to employ local people as well, and therefore we're fulfilling our obligations, and the government appreciates that, recognises that, and that has been the government therefore has been very supportive of our project, remaining very supportive of our project, and also very keen to see us being successful, and part of that is by renewing our licences in a timely manner as well.
Yeah, well, let's go into the government, you know, being very supportive. Let's go into the tender here, because there was a bit of a bump in the road a while back, and the request for proposal. So where are you at the moment, and what's the thoughts on that, Tony?
The director group recently met with the minister in Botswana, and the minister reiterated the government's support. The project reiterated the fact that Cabinet had approved the tender to go forward and to come, therefore, to a logical conclusion. So the minister reiterated that the government is continuing to be fully supportive of that project. So what we're waiting on now is the re-tender of the earlier process, which came to an end without a conclusion. So the government has proposed that the project will be re-tendered, the 100 megawatt power project will be re-tendered, and we look forward to that re-tendering to be able to announce that, and we expect it very soon, but it's by the same token, it's very difficult to put a time frame on that. They have indicated, all indications are that the difficult parts of the original tender, which meant that it couldn't come to a successful conclusion, will be ironed out such that a new process should facilitate the timely award of a power purchase agreement.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you're also considering becoming a member of the South African Power Pool. Can you explain this, please?
Yes, the government tender process is very important, and we intend to continue down that process. It's a process that's been going on for some time. A lot of time, effort and money has been invested in that process by both the government and ourselves. In addition to that formal tender process, we are continuing with stakeholder consultation to get clearance for our proposed a power plant and power lines to connect to the grid. We're proceeding to get the environmental approvals for that proposed power plant and poles and wires to connect to the grid. And we're also pursuing the approach of joining the Southern African Power Pool and applying for a generation licence in addition to the previously mentioned formal process. That just gives us a belt and braces approach and should facilitate the connection to the grid and then ultimately selling power not only within Botswana but the broader Southern African power pool.
Absolutely. Okay. And so from a sort of personal standpoint, I mean, obviously, you know, the course of business never runs smoothly, especially when you are, you know, in a new area like you are at the moment, trailblazing, you know, CBM in Botswana. But from a personal standpoint, Tony, are you quite happy with how everything's shaping up?
Oh, of course, could always go quicker, Justin, and I'm sure our shareholders take that position as well. But we've certainly made massive strides forward in our project over the last 1 to 2 years. They include the first independently certified gas reserves in the country, and we've expanded those reserves on a couple of occasions now. We've also successfully applied for and have been granted the first mining license for coalbed methane gas in the country. So they are indeed massive achievements. And the next phase of the program will be to drill a series of new production pods, gas production pods, mm-hmm. in the area that has been independently determined as being the best to deliver the highest gas flows in our acreage. So that drilling will be undertaken very soon. That will start, the process will start very soon. And with success in that process, that will be the springboard for both adding a further value to the company and should also therefore be reflected in the share price. The news flow, that work program, and the news flow based on that work program will be continue throughout the remainder of this year once we get going on that in the very very near future.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to put it into sort of a time frame here, so before the end of the year, all going well, all going smoothly, Tony, what are you hoping to achieve?
Before the end of the year, we would certainly hope to have some concrete advancements on the power purchase agreement with the government. And regardless of that process, we would anticipate some significant advancement towards connecting to the grid with all the approvals process. So in other words, any delay that has been experienced in relation to the power purchase agreement award would not have held us back in terms of connecting to the grid and the time frame, the process of connecting to the grid. And we would anticipate in a trouble-free drilling manner that we have most, if not all, of our proposed new production pods drilled by the end of the year, and some, if not all, flowing water and perhaps early indications of gas. The process with coal bed methane is that the wells need to be drilled and the water removed, a large part of the water pumped out of those wells before the pressure changes and the gas starts to flow. And towards the end of the year, we would anticipate some strong indications of how those wells are looking like they're going to perform, and through into from that latter part of this year through to the first quarter of next year, we anticipate those results from the drilling to come in. As I mentioned before, that should create a nice steady stream of good and very newsworthy announcements to make.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent stuff. Well, one final thing, Tony, for someone listening right now who likes the sound of this, but is not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, we're the most advanced gas to power company in Botswana. We're working hard on obtaining a power purchase agreement, which is our key document to connect to the grid and to sell our product. We're very advanced in that. And we're about to undertake a major drilling program with the aim of flowing more gas and generating a considerable amount of positive news flow, Justin.
Excellent stuff, Tony. Good to chat to you. And I say lots happening in the not-too-distant future, so hopefully we'll be chatting again very soon. Thanks very much.
Very good. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jay Bhattacharjee, CEO of Aminex. That's AEX ticker. Jay, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much. Good morning to you.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. So I know I've been approached quite a few times by people on social media, and people mention you a lot and say it'd be good to get you guys on the podcast. So nice for you to come on. For people not aware of the story of the company or the new to the podcast, can you summarize what the business is all about, please, Jay?
Sure. We're an oil and gas company that's predominantly focused in Tanzania right now. And we are a company that's looking to grow not only with our portfolio in Tanzania, which has got a large resource base, but we're also looking to establish ourselves in other jurisdictions in a low-cost environment that can return, some robust shareholder returns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you said a large resource base there. What are the figures around that? Do you have any resource numbers?
Yeah, we do. So we've been over the last couple of years, we've been fortunate enough to have our resource numbers increase almost to a magnitude of 12-fold. We've got about 750 BCF of 2C contingent resources in our Rovuma area, and a GIP number of 1.9 TCF. Again, these are big numbers down there. We've got a couple of wells down there, and we're looking to drill a few more wells in the very short order.
Yeah, excellent stuff. So I know, so going back over some recent news, I suppose the most significant of which of late is probably the transformational Rovuma farm out. Can you take us into the detail of this, please, Jay?
Yeah, so we feel it's a transformational deal, and we think it's going to be a really good deal for the company and also for the country as well. What the deal is it's a potentially multi-well infrastructure carry through straight through to production. So what the investors get is a significantly de-risked project, and you know, should the project go according to schedule, we'll have multiple wells producing and effectively be carried straight through to free cash flow.
Wow, and over what time period is this, Jay?
Nobody's looking to sit around and get things or wait around on things. So we're on the trail right now. We've got we're moving towards getting a rig into country already. We're looking towards getting our operations moving forward as fast as possible. We need to get that gas out of the ground. Government wants it, we want it, and you know, again, no one's looking to sit around on this. So we're actually just going ahead with it right now.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And as far as, you know, hoping to achieve the next sort of milestone, what will that likely be?
Well, it'll be a couple things. We need to close this deal off. So we should have a vote. We will have a vote on the transaction. Yeah, all shareholders, including the Zubairs, will be allowed to vote on it. But operationally, we remain the operator right now, and you know, we're continuing to move forward to getting that rig. And there, the tenders did go out, and we've gotten the preliminary tenders back now from the drilling contractors, and so we're just evaluating those right now. And I think the next step would probably be to identify a rig and you know, move forward towards drilling.
Yeah, absolutely, cool stuff. Okay. Well, Jay, if someone is listening to this and likes the sound of what's happening right now at Aminex, but are not following the story as yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Sure. Well, corporately, you know, as almost all CEOs would likely say, we feel that we're pretty materially undervalued right now. And we've been, you know, we've got a lot of skin in the game. All management has shares. They're not granted shares. They're purchased shares in the market. And we continue to hold. On that, we're a company that's got a lot of operations upcoming, and we're a company that's, you know, should this deal go through, we're a company that's funded straight through to cash flow production in Rovuma, and that's something that's exciting for us.
Absolutely. Jay, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Appreciate your time today. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Hanno Pengelly, Chief Development Officer of NCONDESI Energy. That's NCCL, ticker. Hanno, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Now, you've released some news there, a project update on your project there in Mozambique, and we'll go into the detail of that a bit. Before we do, Hanno, say someone's tuned in for the first time, never heard the podcast, are not familiar with the company. How would you summarise what you're all about, please?
So NCONDESI is a leading coal-fired power plant project in Mozambique, in the northern part of Mozambique, looking to develop a 300 megawatt coal-fired power plant that will supply power onto the Mozambican grid, and is currently in the middle of negotiations with General Electric and China Machinery Engineering Corporation, who are looking at taking a controlling stake in the business.
Excellent stuff. Okay, the project update. And I'll say it's had some mixed reviews, the reaction to it. So it's probably worth you going through the key highlights and then explaining why you think it's had a mixed reviews, please. It'd be good, Hanno.
Yeah, sure. Look, I mean, there's some important messaging that needs to come across here from the announcement, you know, that's in the announcement, and needs to be looked at in detail here. The first thing, and it's the main takeaway, from the, which is that the tariff proposal that we put together with our partners, the updated tariff proposal, has been submitted to both the local power utility EDM as well as the Department of Energy in Mozambique. We had indicated to the market that we would be submitting that in late June, early July. That has taken place. We have had subsequent meetings, with the parties. And, the key thing here is that, the proposal hasn't been rejected. Quite the opposite. We've now been asked to move on to the next level with more detailed discussions on that. So I think a very positive message here is that our updated proposal is hasn't been signed off yet, but certainly the doors have been opened to get to the next phase. Now this was a potential risk for the business. It's one that we felt comfortable that we would achieve, but there was always a risk that following our meetings in January, EDM was very clear that although they were very happy with our new partners that we brought on board, the previously agreed tariff envelope just wouldn't work in the current environment in Southern Africa, and that we needed to revise that tariff number. So there was always a risk that we would update our tariff number and it would be rejected, which would cause an even longer delay in terms of getting the project going and moving forward. So, from where the company is sitting, we're feeling very positive at the moment, and that we've taken a big step in submitting a new tariff number, and that being sort of taken to the next level now with government and EDM to go into even more detailed discussions on that. And we're targeting having those discussions in a detailed workshop sometime in early August. We had hoped to have those meetings during July. They had originally been planned for July, but for various reasons, those have been moved out. But we're confident that those meetings will happen, and that basically from those meetings, we will then align ourselves with government with respect to when they want that power on the grid. EDM has indicated to, in a 10-year strategy document that they produced earlier this year, that they are looking for 300 megawatts of coal-fired energy to come from the Tet region, which is where our project is located. And they're looking for that power to be delivered by 2023. Our project is well positioned to meet that power target. At the moment, with our timetable, we're able to deliver power by 2022, so 2023 is very comfortable for us. But the key here is now to go to the table for a detailed discussion with government. They want to go into more depth on the background behind our updated tariff proposal with our partners, and then align ourselves with EDM strategy for when it wants power on the grid. So what is important to come out of this meeting, and what will be very important to update investors on subsequent to the meeting, will be we will get a much clearer idea of what the timetable is for the project for the next key phases, which are really finalization of the tariff, the restart of negotiations on the power purchase agreement, which will be the 25-year offtake agreement for the power, as well as timing for then financial close and first power on the grid. And, those are all very important milestones that, at this moment we have timetables, our own internal timetables, but we need to align that with government's timetable and EDM's timetables as well. And critically, I think from a JDA perspective, the JDA, we're comfortable, with the process with our partners. Obviously very, getting support from EDM and government to move on to the next step has been well received by all parties. And, the JDA will really fall in place as soon as we've had these meetings with government, and basically they've given the nod to move the project forward. So the JDA, it's not that there's a big negotiation still outstanding or there's anything sinister going on here. It's really just that, from a timing perspective, we need to get this process with government behind us, and then the JDA should fall into play shortly after that. We've given an indicative timetable of 3 months, post the support of government. But, that's just a very rough number with a bit of contingency in it. We would hope to try and get that done a lot sooner than that, as soon as, we've got the necessary support from government.
Yeah. So it's a case of, you're still very confident with what's going on, but it's taking longer than you thought. But things never run smoothly in business, as we know. But you're still very confident, yes?
Oh yes, look, I mean, you just mustn't lose sight of the milestone that's been achieved here. You know, we have submitted a updated tariff proposal to government, and they've sort of accepted to go to the next level with us. I mean, that's a major achievement, and it gives everybody comfort, you know, from our side, our partners, that, you know, government want to look at this project, they want to move forward with this project, and that the commercial terms that we put forward to them are attractive. You know, that's a major achievement for us. And to be fair, you know, that's the key driving factor here, is that without government support to take this project forward, you know, you don't have an off-taker for the power. So, you know, this is a major step, and you know, it can't be understated, you know what a milestone it is. I think the unfortunate part from this process is that, you know, as I say, we had hoped to meet, you know, to complete a number of these meetings during the month of July. It certainly was, you know, in the schedule, both in our schedule as well as government. But it just looks like that, you know, we're going to need a bit more time with them to take them through that, which, you know, I think is understandable given that, you know, you're negotiating a tariff here, which will basically be part of a $1 billion project and, you know, be payable over a 25-year period. So it's not a small negotiation by any feat. And look, we've been here before. We've done this before. So, you know, what I can say from experience and having done this before is that these are all very positive indicators. You know, that should give a degree of comfort that the project is moving in the right direction.
Yeah, okay, cool. We had one question from Richard, who's a shareholder, and I think he's trying to get some inside info here, but if you don't ask, you don't get. And he says, could you tell us the actual details of the JDA, the tariff details, any numbers, any figures around that? Now, I understand it's quite sensitive, so what can you give? I mean, what maybe doesn't he know that you could, or give some, you know, a hint as to, or signpost, or what can you say about that?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, we are in the middle of a negotiation with government, so, you know, it's not the right time to put out numbers yet, just because, you know, as I say, these are not finalized. What I think is important is that, you know, we have submitted a number which was both acceptable to ourselves as well as our potential partners, General Electric and CMEC. You know, the number we put forward to government was something that we felt comfortable generated the prerequisite concerns to move forward. And you know, and most importantly, from a GE and a CMEC perspective, it's a tariff number that, you know, they were prepared to stay in the deal on. So, you know, and then the fact that we've now had government, you know, positive response from government to move to the next step, I mean, it all suggests that from a numbers perspective, although we can't say what it is, that the numbers are at a level which is acceptable to our large partners who are looking at taking, you know, a minimum 60% equity stake in the business. So, you know, that's a long-winded answer and it's not a specific number, but I think you just have to take guidance from from where it's moving with our where it's moving in sort of in a positive direction with our partners and with government at this stage. And obviously you have to assume, you know, you just have to take the view that, you know, those numbers meet the minimum sort of investment return hurdle rates to get, you know, big companies like these interested and attracted to invest in equity of the project. And a very important point to point out here is that, you know, these are not companies that are looking at just selling their equipment into the business and then sort of moving on to the next project. These are companies that are looking at taking ownership of the business, you know, and funding the vast majority of the equity in this thing, mm-hmm. and operating the project. So, you know, they will have minimum hurdle returns that they need to achieve. And, you know, they've signed off on the current tariff proposal. And again, you know, major milestone to say that, you know, that's been submitted and, you know, it's been accepted to the next stage of negotiation with government. So, you know, all very positive messaging that I think people just need to take into consideration now. As soon as we've agreed the tariff envelope, you know, it is the intention that we will look to, you know, it's a very tricky thing to do because you don't want, you have to be very careful what information you do put out, you know, as not to breach any confidentiality, it is the intention of the company that as soon as the tariff has been finalized, that we will look to provide guidance to the market, you know, the indicative figures as to what, you know, what the tariff actually means.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Excellent stuff. Hanno, one last thing to do. Three reasons. So if someone's listening to this right now and are not following the companies yet, but like the sound of the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
So Nkondezi is one of the most advanced power projects in Southern Africa, listed on AIM. It's got it's in the middle of material negotiations with world-leading partners, General Electric and CIMIC, to conclude an equity transaction to take control of the business and materially de-risk the company. As part of this process, there is, significant news flow that will continue to come out over the coming months as we complete our tariff discussions with government and look to finalize the JDA.
And so before we go, Sohano, so what's the next sort of milestone? What's next?
So Justin, obviously from the press release, it's quite clear that we need to go, we need to complete these detailed workshops with government to get the sort of necessary support that we're looking for to finalize the JDA, and that's a key milestone. But in parallel to that, we've also got our shareholder loan, which matures at the end of September, and we are currently looking at a number of options to restructure that loan, and are hoping to provide an update on that during the course of this month, and that will also be a significant milestone where, as I say, we hope to restructure that loan in a way which is attractive to shareholders and also provide the company with the time it needs to conclude the JDA and close the deal with GE and CIMIC.
Marvellous stuff. Hannah, thanks for that, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is James Campbell, Managing Director of Botswana Diamonds, BOD, BOD. It's the ticker there. James, thanks for joining me again.
Thank you very much indeed, Justin, for having me.
Yes, and you're probably used to the warm weather, but we are suffering over here because you work where you live, it's probably a lot warmer than this. But are we whingers, or is there a real reason why we're whinging?
The British love to talk about the weather, and I'm finding it a bit like home from home at the moment.
Oh, that's nice. Well, listen, for people not aware of Botswana Diamonds, give us a brief summary, James. What's the company all about, please?
Botswana Diamonds is a diamond exploration company focused on Botswana, as the name very much says. It also has significant diamond exploration interests in South Africa, and it's begun to take a toe in the water in Zimbabwe. So essentially, we're focused on the Southern African Craton, which is the largest producer of diamonds in the world.
Yeah, and is it fair to say, so which is at the moment, would you say is your lead project?
It's very difficult to say, Justin, about what is the lead project. It's probably equally balanced between Botswana and South Africa. Both are highly prospective countries, but both have different political risk components attached to it. We've got two very exciting joint ventures in Botswana, and we've got an equally exciting earning arrangement in South Africa.
Okay, well, the last bit of significant news you released was on the Kalahari Desert Exploration Project there. So you did an update there. So take us through the details of this, if you could, James.
Now, this is a fascinating project, Justin. This is part of the Sunland Minerals joint venture with Alrosa. Alrosa are the largest producer of diamonds by weight in the world. And together, we're exploring in the Central Kalahari Game Reserve of Botswana. What we did in the first half of the year, we went and took heavy mineral samples over high-grade geophysical anomalies, which we identified last year. And the theory goes that if these samples produce kimberlite indicators, it would mean that the geophysical anomalies themselves could very well be kimberlite. And the announcement we made a short while ago was very much that, in that we did produce abundant kimberlitic indicators over the geophysical anomalies, which has set us up for a drilling program in H2.
Yeah, absolutely. So in H2, and we're there now. So what's coming up next then?
There are a number of things coming up next. Obviously, what I've just mentioned now, we plan to undertake a drilling program in the Central Kalahari to unequivocally determine as to whether these anomalies are kimberlite or not. And then the other joint venture in Botswana is one called Mibui, and it's with a company called BCL. And BCL is sadly in the throes of liquidation, and the liquidator is looking to exit from this particular joint venture. And we hope that the prospectus, which would market that sale, would be issued within the next 6 months. And we would, of course, RNS that, and it's a particularly exciting project. And then in South Africa, we would look to announce the mineral chemistry results from 8 kimberlites in the Free State province. And these were rediscoveries following looking at historical records of diamond production some 100 years ago. So we believe that is a fascinating potential commercial prospect. We would also look to continue developing our Thorny River project in the Limpopo province and begin to start geological work on our new Moikloof project, also in the Limpopo province. And then finally, I mentioned at the very beginning of the interview, we are beginning to take baby steps in Zimbabwe, and we would hope, following what we hope and pray are peaceful elections, that we can take a little bit more than baby steps in Zimbabwe and get cracking on the ground.
Yeah. Do you know what's interesting? Whenever obviously I'm an active investor, when I look at companies that are small cap companies and they do sort of JVs with bigger companies, it's always very interesting because you understand the bigger company, you know, is almost due diligence for yourself, isn't it, as an investor. And the fact you mentioned that Al Rosa is a JV with you speaks volumes, really, doesn't it?
No, it certainly does, Justin. And I think that I'm blessed of having spent over 20 years at De Beers and then almost 15 years in the junior space. So hopefully, you know, I can talk the language of a major and equally the language of a junior. But they certainly bring a very different skill set, competences and expertise, which complements our unique country knowledge.
Excellent stuff. And what's the diamond market like at the moment?
The diamond market is good. It's the strongest recovering commodity post the global financial crisis. It's the least volatile. And with the supply-demand imbalance continuing, all the experts out there who look at these things are forecasting strong diamond price growth into the future.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, James, one final thing here. If someone's listening to this and likes the sound of it and of the progress you're making but are not following the story, give them 3 quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Absolutely, Justin. The first one, diamonds are the strongest recovering commodity since the global financial crisis and the least volatile. Secondly, Southern Africa is the most prolific diamond producer in the world. And thirdly, it is underexplored, and Botswana Diamonds is the most active explorer in the region.
Marvellous stuff. James, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much indeed, Justin.
OK, it's time for the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, SDX Energy, that's SDX. At 4, Maestrano Group, MNO. I heard this in the podcast when they first launched. At 3, Rehobold Resources, RBD. At 2, Alba Mineral Resources, that's ALBA. And number 1, I did buy some stock in this company yesterday. That's not investment advice. It's high risk. But of course, with anything, high potential reward. Imaginatech, and that's IMTK. I tell you why. They've got a new CEO. The old CEO and the new chairman is gone. They're turning over about 3.7 million this year. Their market cap is 1.5 million, okay? Now, the new guy who's come in, Angus, CEO, is ex-Turn, which has done very well of late. He's a serial entrepreneur, and he's taken about 9% of the company. So he's put a lot, you know, a fair amount of change. I mean, it's a small cap, of course, but he's put, you know, a bit of his own money in there. And of late, we've just had, yesterday, a loan from Vinmuria. Now, I would advise you to do some searching on Vinmuria. She's described as the queen of tech. She has created so much value from tech companies in the last 10, 20 years. She's called the queen of tech. She's highly regarded. She also owns 10% of FinCap, and that's the issue at the moment. She's going to take a seat on the board. She's going to put her own money in. So if she does, then FinCap, who's the nomad at the moment, has to resign because she owns 10% as a related party. So they'll have to find a new nomad. I don't think that'll be a problem. Vin is very well known in the industry. But worth checking out. When you have people like that getting behind a tiny market cap like this, I think it's worth looking at. And put that together with the client list Imaginetic has. And it's, you know, they have tier one companies like Shell. In fact, I'm not going to sort of name names, I can't think of it off the top of my head. But if you go to their website and look at clients, you'll see big, well-known names, global companies have used their software product. And even, I think, it's called the Forrester Research Group, which is one of the biggest research groups in the world, have ranked them number one for their product. So it's a good product. They've got revenue. The last board, I think, was a bit expensive. They're spending too much money. They weren't very focused. But that's changed. And like I say, you've got two people come in now putting money into the company. And so hopefully this will be a turnaround. And from where we are at the moment, at 1.5 million market cap, Vinmyria does not put money into tiny market caps like this. Very interesting. At the moment, it's going through a change, going through flux, so it's risk. But like I said, from 1.5 million, there's potential reward there. And that's why I quite like it. And because it's high risk, you know, I'm not going to go crazy on it, but I do like it. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are, at five, Talao Energy, operational report, quarter ending 30th of June, because Tony was just on talking about that. At four, Encondesi Energy, project update. And of course, Hanno was on talking about that. At three, Infostrata, appointment of non-executive director. Doing very well today, the share price. So I do hold stock in that company. And every appointment there strengthens the board. And now it's a very experienced board already compared to the market cap. So you must think, why are these people, again, why are these people, a bit like Imaginetic, why are these people coming onto the board with such experience at a small cap? You've got to look at that. At two, Cora Gold. I do hold stock in that company. Excellent results. I was hoping to get Jonathan on the podcast very soon. Impressive high grades at San Ancora Gold Discovery. And number one most liked RNS came from Harvest Minerals, strategic alliance with major fertilizer company. I do hold stock in that company as well. So out of the top five most liked RNSs, I hold stock in four of them. So that's good news there. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.